Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Hey there and welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. You know, this has turned out to be a really cool and interesting week in golf. Let's start with an event that each year I can't rave about enough. The NCAA Men's Golf Championship. Three rounds of medal play determines the individual national champion. More on him in a moment. And the eight teams that make it to match play. Congratulations to Coach Jamie Green and his Duke Blue Devil team that more than made good account for themselves and the conference. In fact, in post-match interview, following the team's loss in the semis to Alabama, I can make the statement with absolute certainty that all sorts of young golfers all over the country were saying, you know, I'd love to play for that guy. Alabama was eventually swept by Oklahoma State. That team is stacked. I mean, top to bottom, top-notch talent, and they were playing on their home course. Don't know how I quite feel about that. Back to the individual winner. Brock Everett goes to Augusta University. He's a senior. He's a former walk-on who was told the only chance he had to make the team as a freshman was to redshirt his freshman year and then try to find a spot for himself in his second. Well, he did that. And 4 years later, he's a national champion. You know, there's a lesson for all of us in there of perseverance, faith, and belief. Speaking of perseverance, it did not look good for the United States Women's Open for a long time this week in Birmingham. I had the chance to talk to Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com on location on Wednesday. You'll hear that conversation. Also, we're two Sundays away from the final round of the U.S. Open at historic Shinnecock Hills. World Golf Hall of Famer Curtis Strange will be on course for Fox, and I had the chance to catch up with him this week as well. Also, the 54th North Carolina Open will be contested this next week at the club at Irish Creek, and we'll get the full 411 from Sally Morgan and Corey Armstrong from the Carolinas PGA. But we begin this week with a conversation recorded Wednesday afternoon at a very, very, very soggy Shoal Creek in Birmingham, Alabama, site of the United States Women's Open with Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com. Ron, I remember when Rory won at Congressional, that was a really sloppy mess, but I've lived in Birmingham. I've played Shoal Creek. It sits in some low land in Birmingham. This is beyond that, right?
Well, you know, any golf course that's got the word creek in its name is probably, probably a tip-off right there that you're going to be in for some trouble. This is as wet as I've ever seen a golf course. We've had 4 inches of rain in the last 48 hours, and they've had 6 inches of rain over the last week. So it's very, very wet out there. And I have a feeling that we're going to see ball in hand a lot when play begins, not because they're going to play lift, clean, and place, because USGA won't do that, but between the embedded ball rule, the casual water rule, and probably a generous use of ground under repairs. You're going to see a lot of players picking up their balls and cleaning them and then dropping them and hitting them.
We'll talk about the casual water rule in a second, but my problem with the USGA sometimes is they just can't seem to come off their high horse. I mean, it's my problem with them when they take courses and insist on altering par fives to par fours so that they have a number at 280, par 70 each day. That bothers me. But what is the problem with lift, clean, and place? They act like they're dirty words or something, Ron.
Well, their argument is that there's enough protection in the rules of golf, enough relief granted. You know, the casual water rule, I mean, this entire golf course can be pretty close to casual water. So with casual water, you can pick the ball up and put it in your hand. And I also think that you're going to see them draw the casual water, not casual water, ground under repair lines very generously. So essentially, the golf course is going to be marked in such a way that that players are going to be able to pick the ball up a whole bunch of times out there.
Now, my question with casual water is this. Isn't the rule written in such a way that when you do take relief from casual water, you have to take complete relief? At this point, to take complete relief, you have to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, I was at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am 1 year when they cut that tournament down to 36 holes, and it was not an official tournament because there was one hole at Poppy Hills that there was no place to take relief. And so what they ended up, they had to cancel that tournament. Now, this is a major championship, and the other thing the USGA does is not only won't they play lift, clean, and place, they're going to play 72 holes. If we have to be here till July, they'll play 72 holes. That's just the way they're going to do it. There's never been a men's or women's U.S. Open champion decided in fewer than 72 holes.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com is our guest taking dead aim. All right, so they're going to play 72 holes. It's going to be a mess. Normally U.S. Open rounds are in the five and a half hour range. What are we looking at as far as a typical round of golf under these conditions?
Yeah, I think it is going to be slow because, if they were playing lift, clean, and place, then people would just walk to the ball, pick it up, clean it, and hit it. I think we're going to get a lot more rulings this week. There's going to be a lot more cases where they're going to be calling officials in to say, hey, is this casual water? Hey, is this ball embedded? And I do think that we're going to see very, very, very long rounds of golf. The one saving grace that they've got is, you know, they no longer have that 10-shot rule. I was at Oakland Hills Men's U.S. Open 1996 when everybody within 10 shots of the lead would make the cut. Well, they had 108 people make the cut. But now it's low 60 in ties. So if we can get the first 36 holes in, the field will be cut to a manageable number, and they would be able to play 36 holes on Sunday if they have to, because the field size will be manageable.
If you were to put a number on it, a gauge as to how many of the players had come in advance of this week, maybe last month or 2 or 3 weeks ago, and played Shoal Creek so they have some knowledge of the golf course, what would you put that number at? Because as we're recording this conversation, there has been zero practice rounds played on Shoal Creek.
Yeah, well, they have come in vastly early. I would put the number at close to zero, except for Emma Talley, who's a member here. She might be the only one. But I was talking to Kari Webb today, and she said, hey, I live in Florida. I saw what the weather forecast was going to be, and I got in early, and I played 18 holes Monday morning. So she got an 18-hole practice round in on Monday. She was smart. I talked to a caddy for another player, and I said, how much of the golf course have you seen? And he said, I've seen the 18th hole, and that's it. So it ranges from that. They didn't open the course up today for a practice round till 1 o'clock. So that means that not everybody who signed up for a practice round today is going to get a practice round today.
Is that going to be decided by World Golf Ranking, or how is that determined?
I think it's determined based on how they signed up. So the people who had a 6:40 practice round time today got that 1 o'clock out there. So the people who signed up to practice in the afternoon today are out of luck.
Ron, how big an advantage would a practice round be on a track that's this wet, so you're not going to get some of the bouncy nuances that you normally would, and the rough might not come into play as much as it would because of that?
Yeah, that's another point that Kari Webb made. She said, one of the good things about the course being so wet is that you don't need that local knowledge of, I've got to hit the ball 35 feet right and behind this pin because then it'll funnel down there. That they're going to be able to more just take dead aim. They're going to be able to take dead aim off the tee. The ball's going to hit and stop. They're going to be able to take dead aim on the green. So some of the local knowledge factors that you would need to know are not going to be necessary because the course is not going to play the bouncy way that that I'm sure the USGA wanted to. And remember, this is the first year of the new date for the Women's U.S. Open. It's now going to be played 2 weeks before the Men's U.S. Open every year. So, having a tournament in May can raise a lot of issues in a lot of parts of the country, weather-wise.
So will we never see the experiment again that we saw a couple of years ago in Pinehurst, where you have the men's and women's event playing back-to-back and on the same track?
I think Pinehurst is the only place they could do that, and I think that week was an unqualified success. Now, they were extremely lucky that week. There were about 30 things that could have gone wrong, and none of them did. You know, like the men's tournament could have gone to Monday. There could have been a weather delay. There's a zillion things that could have gone wrong. None of them happened. But I do think that Pinehurst is the only facility that really can, both because of the nature of the soil there, you know, that the course doesn't get scarred up as much on that sandy soil, and the fact that the facility is just so big. So I think, except for Pinehurst, we're probably not going to see that again.
Did you miss the memo where we live in God's country? The sky is Carolina blue down here. Did you get that memo?
Well, I tell you, it would be okay with me if they played every U.S. Open Pinehurst number two. I mean, actually, you know, if nothing else, I can have Carl's Pork Chops at the Pinecrest Inn every day.
Oh, so great. Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. Other things about Shoal Creek. I believe, do they not have the sub-air system on at least the greens at Shoal Creek now?
Yeah, they do. They do. So they're going to be able to drive these greens out. Now, the question's going to be, how much more? I mean, you know what this part of the country is like. The weather forecast is essentially chance of thunderstorms every day, which is essentially the weather forecast for the entire summer months.
Right.
You know, you never know when thunderstorms are going to pop up. So that'll be the – and really – going down the road, too, electricity is a bigger threat. I mean, electricity,
yes,
by rule, they have to stop play.
Well, and Birmingham is near that tornado alley. I mean, you get all sorts of unpredictable weather in that area. Nicholas used to always talk about when he went to a major championship, if he heard people complaining about this or complaining about that, he just immediately crossed them off his list as people who could possibly win. And he said, usually by the time I got to Thursday, two-thirds of that list was incapable of winning the championship, and I only had to worry about a third of the field. With the size of this field, how many do you think are mentally tough enough to actually win this event? How many people have the opportunity to win?
Yeah, there are a lot of people, players, who are already on record complaining about not playing lift clean in place. Specifically, Christy Kerr has been really vocal about it. Stacey Lewis has been vocal about it. And it is going to be interesting to see. You know, I remember 1999 Men's British Open at Carnoustie. That's the hardest golf course setup I ever saw. And, you know, I knew on Tuesday I eliminated about 30 players who were just complaining so much I knew they had no chance. And so I agree with Nicholas on that. I think that the way this golf course is going to be, somebody who drives the ball aggressively and accurately is going to have a huge advantage, you know. And I look at players like Sung Hyun Park. I look at Michelle Wee. I look at Brooke Henderson. I look at Minji Lee, who won last week. Those are four players who hit the ball fairly long and pretty accurately. And that kind of game is going to play really well here this week.
Does it surprise you that veteran players like Kerr and Lewis would fall into the complaining trap?
You know, both of them have always been very outspoken about what their positions are. You know, when the major at Avion was cut to 54 holes because of bad weather, they were prominent complainers about that. So it didn't really surprise me with that. You know, I'm a big believer that, in terms of course setup and course conditions, you're all facing the same obstacles. You're all playing the same golf course. You're all playing under the same conditions, and you should just go out there and play it. I remember the superintendent at Carnoustie in 99 who set the golf course up that week for the British Open. When I asked him, what do you say to the players who were complaining about the setup? And his answer was, Hogan would have figured it out. And, of course, that's where Hogan won his only British Open, was at Carnoustie in 1953. So, you know, yeah, you just got to go out and play the golf course.
Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. He is soaked at Shoal Creek. A name that we haven't brought up, but I wanted to ask you about specifically, because when I look on Instagram and I see Lexi Thompson's hand in a brace complaining about a wrist injury, I go, uh-oh. How is she? How is she feeling?
Well, you know, that wrist injury has come and gone for her several times over the last year and a half, I'd say. So, I don't think that we're going to know. And when I talk to her agent about it, it's one of those things of they're not going to know what the condition is until she starts playing. But it has been something, I don't want to use the word chronic, but it's been something that's reoccurred for her several times over the last year.
Is there a correlation to young players, how much they're playing coming up, the modern golf swing? Because we're starting to see more and more to this. Specifically, Brooks Koepka, sat out 3 or 4 months, came back and just re-injured it, and he supposedly popped it back into place this last weekend. He played great, but you have Koepka and Lexi Thompson, two young players who've been playing a long time for their ages, coming up with this injury.
You know, there's a lot of doctors now who are coming to think that part of the reason there's been a rash of injuries, not just in golf but in all sports, is that kids are specializing at too early of an age. You know, I mean, we're seeing 19-year-olds have Tommy John surgery in baseball, and that's one of the schools of thoughts out there, is that the previous generation played every sport. You know, they played football, baseball, basketball, golf, and develop their muscles in a more complete way. And there is a school of thought out there that if all you do from a very early age is one thing, like hitting a golf ball, then you could be setting yourself up for injury.
Get you out of here on this. You mentioned her name briefly. She is the bellwether cow for women's golf, in my opinion, in this country. Is Michelle Wee healthy? How is she feeling coming into this? And how great would it be for the game for her to win her second U.S. Open?
Yeah, she does seem to be healthy. She's playing some of her most consistent golf of her career this year. She's pretty much in the top 15 in every statistical category, which means that her putting is vastly, vastly improved. She's, for some reason, always played USGA events well. And, she almost won a Women's U.S. Open when she was 16 years old back in 2006. And her only major is that 2014 Women's Open at Pinehurst. I expect her to be a factor here this week.
From RonSyrak.com, that is the past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism, Ron Syrak. And up next, we check in with World Golf Hall of Famer and Fox Sports golf analyst Curtis Strange as he takes dead aim at the upcoming United States Men's Open at Shinnecock Hills, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors, and are joined now by World Golf Hall of Famer and Fox Sports golf analyst Curtis Strange. I want to start with this. Am I crazy, or do you seem to be enjoying life, the game, and your involvement in it as much or more than ever?
Well, I'm certainly as they say, a good place now. I'm enjoying everything. I'm fishing a lot. I'm playing a little social golf. I am, I'm not going to say more than ever, because I really had a ball doing what I did for 25 years. Even during the struggles, it was still it's still all part of the climb to the top, and it was all great fun. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Before we get to the U.S. Open, there's one other thing I've been meaning to ask you for the past couple of years, and that's about your involvement with the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. This was the second year since Arnie passed, and I remember when Byron Nelson left us, and his tournament got in some real trouble when the man was no longer sitting on the 18th green. What is the state of the tournament at Bay Hill? Is it healthy? Is it in a good place going forward?
Oh, I think it's tremendous. I don't know. I think every tournament has a lot of different elements that make it successful or not. And one thing with Byron Nelson, if I can just speculate for a moment, is it had nothing to do with really Byron passing. It was the dates on the schedule. I think some people didn't love the golf course, although the golf course evolved. Bay Hill is fantastic. Amy Saunders and Rory Saunders, Amy being one of Arnold's daughters, has taken over, along with Sam, the grandson. And when he's not playing, this year they had the best field they've ever had. And they got a huge purse. They got a wonderful sponsor in MasterCard now, or have for like 15 or 16 years. And they just re-upped. And that's a big part of a tournament, too, having a good, solid sponsor. It stands for everything Arnold stood for. Class, quality, good people. It's in a good spot right now, and I'm just glad to be a very, very small part of it.
The great Curtis Strange is our guest taking dead aim. All right, the U.S. Open returns to one of its favored children, Shinnecock Hills, this year. What are your thoughts on the USGA in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, trying out some new venues like Chambers Bay or last year at Erin Hills? What are your thoughts on the USGA venturing out like that?
Well, I hope that was a venture that doesn't appear on the radar anytime soon. That wasn't politically correct. Let me reword that. I hope they're over their ventures. You know, I just think the U.S. Open speaks. It's our national championship. Part of the history and tradition of the tournament is the history and tradition of these 8 or 10 courses that we continue to go to. Now, I know the argument where every course they go to when it's new, like Bethpage, they went to that new back in, what, the 90s, and it was a huge hit. Okay, that's fine. They went to Torrey Pines on the West Coast. That was somewhat of a hit. I get that. But they were quality golf courses before they started. So I just love that it went to Oakmont 2 years ago. I love that I didn't love Erin Hills last year, and I love Shinnecock this year. It's going to be fantastic. So much depends on the weather, and it's a game played outdoors, so why not?
Yeah, you know, part of me liked, I think, what the USGA was trying to do in that, you know, it's the national championship. So, you know, let's take it up to the Pacific Northwest. Let's move it to a place, you know, in the middle of the country that really isn't serviced that often by a United States Open. I kind of get what they were trying to do. I think, like you, they've been scared off now. I mean, the only venue that's new coming up in the next 10 years is L.A. North in 23, and I think we all can agree that L.A. North is a slam dunk.
Well, it's a slam dunk, and I hope it's a huge success so it continues to stay on the road. We did the Walker Cup out there last year at Fox, and it's a fantastic place. It's like, it really is like the Augusta National of the West. So we got a good string of courses coming up. So we will have history and tradition. And the viewer turns into that as well. They know these old golf courses. Now, a lot is how the USGA sets them up, and we know that's been different in the last 5 or 6 years. But I think Shinny's going to be a good test, a little wider than the three previous Opens, modern Opens. But these guys play a different game than we did, so I think it's going to be okay.
You've won this thing twice, back-to-back even. What sets Shinnecock Hills apart to you as a U.S. Open venue?
Well, it's part of the history. Shinnecock is one of the 5 original USGA member clubs, so that speaks volumes for going to back to Shinnecock. I don't know why they didn't have it there for 60 or 70 years, but that's I guess, a story for another day. I don't understand that, but it's been hugely successful the last 3 Opens they've had there. I know they had a bit of a debacle on the 7th green in 04, but, hey, that happens. when you get a course to the edge, and that happens. But, you know, being an Open champion and going to an old friend in Shinnecock, it makes me happy and know that it's in good hands this year.
You played in 2 U.S. Opens at Shinnecock. In 86, yeah, Things didn't quite go your way. 95, T36.
Oh, really? When was your first clue?
Well, I was going to use a phrase like slamming your trunk on Friday, but I thought I would go a different route. In 95, you finished T36. I'm not saying it didn't fit your eye, but what was it about the track those 2 weeks that you found so challenging? Was it really windy?
Well, I'm one of those guys that preaches no excuses all the time. But my excuse in 86 is that it blew us off the golf course the first 2 days. It was cold and rainy, and I couldn't get the hell out of Dodge. So that's my reasoning for 06. I roomed with Jay Haas and some other player who I don't remember. We all 3 missed a cut. We got it there Friday afternoon. But 04, I actually played pretty decent. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm sorry, 96. And I've been back a couple of times for different corporate outings. So I think it's just a wonderful venue. It's got a nice, warm, and charming atmosphere about it. It's an old school. I just think it's pretty cool for the U.S. Open.
Well, I saw you sent out some pictures on social media from a media event there 1 or 2 weeks ago from the porch of the historic clubhouse there at Shinnecock, which is one of the great clubhouses in America. And just looking out over the golf course from there, it's one of those sort of perfect views if you love golf, right?
Well, it really is. It's like sitting on the back porch and overlooking, you know, your firstborn. I mean, it's just to sit in there at 5 o'clock and maybe have a cold beverage would be the highlight of your day at golf. I know that. But you know, the Open is the Open. It's going to be tough. Crenshaw and Cora, for your listeners, came in a couple of years ago, took it back to the original, basically design, with very wide fairways. So they have narrowed the fairways down for the U.S. Open. They're not as narrow as they were in the three previous Opens, but I think this will be okay. They've done a lot of work up there. You know, it's a huge endeavor for the members of the club to put on something like this. So it doesn't come easy for everyone involved.
I'm glad you brought up Corey Crenshaw. Curtis Strange is our guest taking Dead Aim. Some of the work they did, they added 500 yards to the course. It'll play to almost 7,500 yards. Was it just a matter of lengthening tees and carries, or where was some of that length added?
It was just on tees. They didn't do anything to the greens. They enlarged the greens because, as we know, over the years, all greens shrink, and they had gotten a good far away from the bunkers. So they got them back to the edge of the bunkers, the greenside bunkers. They look fantastic. They just put it on a bunch of holes that needed some length. You know, in my day, 480 par 4 was a hell of a par 4. Now 520 is a hell of a par 4. So it's just how the game has changed. We learned from last year at Erin Hills, which played 7,700 two of the 4 days, that length doesn't matter. You have to make them put it in the fairway and putt the greens and chip around. Around Shinnecock, it's going to be much like last year at Erin Hills, where there's not going to be a lot of rough. There's going to be a lot of runoff. We saw last year that that really doesn't penalize the players too much. They chip so well out of the short grass fairway. So we're going to see how they do it again this year at Shinny, because it's the same thing. It's a lot of fairway cut around the greens. Only three greens have rough. I think they need rough around greens, to be quite honest with you, but they haven't asked my opinion, so I haven't given it. But they, you know, rough is really more difficult than fairway cut grass from around the greens.
Well, if they want rough, who they need to talk to is whoever set up Karsten Creek this week for the NCAA championship. I don't know if you saw any of that, but that looked like the massacre at Wingfoot. I've never seen rough a foot off the fairway, you know, swallowing people's ankles, at least not in many, many years.
Well, see, that's when I don't understand. And, you know, I have a great relationship with the USGA, all the guys that set up the golf course, but they want to be the kinder and gentler and give these guys a chance to hit out of the rough. And then we go to the 2 weeks after the U.S. Open last year, single digits won the PGA Tour events, and 17 under won the U.S. Open. Somebody's missing something. And then you see at the NCAA they had deep rough, and there's times on tour there's deep rough. I just don't understand, but they think they set it up and they are getting a good champion every year, or they hope to, so that's the way it is. But I personally think that the U.S. Open setup should be the toughest and most demanding test all year long, and right now it's not that way.
Are you trying to imply that Joe Dye and Frank Hannigan were never referred to as kindler and gentler?
No, they weren't. I respected the hell out of Joe Dye and P.J. Boatwright, who set it up after Joe and before David Eager and Tom Meeks. They set up a golf course and say, go play, man. And now we have wider fairways. We have graduated rough. You know, it's not that tough. Let's just go grow some rough and say, let's go play.
C.B. McDonald, Seth Rayner, William Flynn, these are big boy old-school architects. All of them at various times had their hands on Shinnecock Hills. What do you think they would think of the way new-school golfers play their old-school golf course?
Oh, my gosh. They, without the increase in equipment and ball over the years, if you dropped them back in Shinnecock in 2 weeks and watched the way they hit the golf ball, they wouldn't believe it. It's, you know, just from 04 here, they hit the ball 50 yards longer than the guys in 04.
Yeah.
And 50 yards not only relates, again, for our listeners, not only relates off the tee, but they hit 7-iron 200 yards. So they're 50 yards closer to the green, hitting much less iron. So they're basically hitting wedge and 9-iron on every single hole. A 500-yard par 4, they're hitting 7 or 8-iron and 2. So it's a different game altogether.
Yeah, I always like to point to, if look at Corey Pavin's shot on the 18th at Shinnecock to win it. It was made with a four-wood. It was the four-wood of his life. If someone of today's U.S. Open is where Corey Pavin is, they have popped up a drive or a three-wood or something because they've been hitting, you know, 8-irons and 9-irons into that green.
Well, you're right. And even from Corey Pavin probably had 200 yards with the four-wood, maybe 195 or so. Guess what? That's 7-iron territory now for these guys. So I don't care how far you hit it, you can control a 7-iron a whole lot better than that head cover taking off that 4-wood. So it's just a different game. But, you know, I still admire and marvel at the way they play. They hit it in the middle of the club face every time, and that's a skill in itself. It's not these young kids' fault that they're bigger, stronger, run faster, and jump higher than we did, and it's certainly not their fault that the ball goes so far. And the clubs are so much better. So that's technology. And we're all trying to deal with that and try to get our arms around what we do about it. But right now, it's a pretty good, fun game to watch.
Curtis Strange is our guest taking Dead Aim. You saw the course a couple of weeks ago. What do you look at when examining a golf course like Shinnecock as far as determining your opinions on what it takes to win or who will win? What do you specifically look for?
You know, when I go in there in 2 weeks, And all of my memory is from playing the golf course. So I have a pretty good knowledge of the golf course. But when I go in there and just walk it 2 days prior to my Thursday walk and on course, I still don't get a real, real in-depth sense as if I would have played those 2 days and just walk it. And that's complete honesty to our listeners and viewers on TV. So you only really learn a golf course by playing it and playing it in competition, where you're really thinking on every shot, know where to miss it, where not to hit it, that type of thing. So, but I walk it 2 days. I have a great sense of the golf course. And bottom line, it's demanding off the tee. And, again, with not a lot of rough around the greens, it's going to be, I think you're going to see aggressive play into the greens.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. If you look at the past champions, Raymond Floyd, Corey Pavin, Retief Goosen, the last three people to win a U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, two of those guys were known for having really scary short games, and Retief may have been, for the time period, the best U.S. Open putter I've ever seen.
Exactly. I was going to say it. He putted tremendous during that period.
When he won at Southern Hills and at Shinnecock, it was some of the best putting I'd ever seen. And for three rounds at Pinehurst number 2 in 05, it was some of the best putting I'd ever seen, too. But those are three guys with great, great short games who won at Shinnecock. Does that foretell? Is it going to be somebody who can really, really handle their ball around the greens that you should look for, as opposed to somebody who's a bomb and gouge guy?
You know, I think that all of the bomb and gouge guys, they all have good short games now. They hit it a long ways, but they have that depth touch that you need, and you certainly need that around a U.S. Open. But again, that's even changed because in our day, because we couldn't overpower a golf course, when you drove in the rough of the U.S. Open, very few times could you get it up on the green or around the green. You had to get it up and down 20 or 30 yards. And so the U.S. Open description of the player has changed a little bit. You had to be a grinder in the day, like Corey and like Raymond. You had to work your butt off to send those pars from 20 and 30 yards. And whereas now they can get it on the green from that area. So they might not put it on the green, but it's a much easier up and in than from 20 and 30 yards. So, you know, we can speculate all we want, but so much depends on the weather that week and the weather preceding the Open on how the golf course plays. If the golf course is fast and firm like it was in 04, game on, because the ball will run everywhere, especially with no rough around the greens. But we're just going to have to wait and see what happens that week. But, you know, the U.S. Open champion is always a pretty well-rounded player.
This, to me, should be and usually is the biggest mental test in golf, maintaining your focus in one of these for four rounds. I mean, I got to be perfectly honest with you. I'm going to have trouble maintaining focus for 18 holes in the parent-child this weekend. I can't imagine trying to do what you guys do. What was your secret having won this thing twice?
Put it in the fairway. You know, I was well-rested mentally coming into the week, so I knew that it was going to be challenging from, once again, salvaging pars. Ordinarily, you never have to salvage pars from short of the green. you have to mentally take care of business, take care of all the opportunities you do have, because you just don't have that many opportunities to make birdies like you do on a day-to-day basis on the PGA Tour. You're not going to go into the U.S. Open expecting to make 15 or 16 or 17 birdies at Shinnecock. So your whole outlook has to be different. But you put it in the fairway, and you got to make a few putts.
Historically, when you look at U.S. Opens, and I was looking at a big list again today, I'm forever surprised at people who win and people who don't win. For instance, I still can't believe Sam Snead didn't win a U.S. Open. And as straight a driver as Greg Norman was in his prime, Greg Norman never won a U.S. Open. As great as Phil's short game is, he's never won. Yet Orville Moody and Steve Jones have won a U.S. Open. It's stunning to me sometimes.
Yeah, and you go back to Arnold never winning a PGA, and it probably could have won four or five of them. It happens. I'd like to, which one was the biggest upset?
Orville Moody, maybe?
No, I mean upset. Which was the biggest surprise that did win? I'd have to say Sam Snead.
Yeah, no, I mean
because of all the tournaments and how good he was.
Yeah.
Outside of Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson, they were head and shoulders above everybody else. So, but it happens. You got to play a lot of defensive percentage golf, and when you look at Greg Norman, his ego got in the way a lot of times. Look at the tournaments he lost. I look at Lanny Watkins, for instance. Lanny could have won one or two Opens because as straight as good a striker the ball as he was, but did Lanny have the patience? I've known Lanny since I've been, 9 years old. He can't spell patience, so he didn't have it. And I say that with all the respect. So, you can, after the fact, you can dissect and speculate all you want, but sometimes it just doesn't happen for individuals.
Get you out of here on this. The great Curtis Strange with Fox Sports is our guest taking Dead Aim. I feel like you worked with a really, really good team when you were at ABC, anchored by Tirico and Judy Rankin, who, in my opinion, is way underrated. What are your thoughts about your team at Fox? How do you like working with Joe Buck? How does he like doing it? How many names is Faxon going to drop this week? I mean, how's it all going to work?
You're real beauty there, I'll tell you. I think Joe Buck, as well as all these other guys I have worked with, are complete professionals.
Yeah.
Okay. He'll be 100% better this year. Joe Buck's a single-digit handicap. He's a 12-time Emmy Award winner. He's done more Super Bowls and World Series than anybody. So we have to give him some slack. He's working with Paul Azinger, who I think is the best in the business. Joe is not a voice that we're recognized with golf. So let's get over that, people. Hell, they're not used to hearing me on the course, which is kind of a fun little gig I have.
I love you on the course. We talk every year after the U.S. Amateur. I love your work in that tournament.
I kind of, as long as my little hips, my hip replacements hold up, I enjoy the hell out of it. But, we have a new team, and this will be our fourth year, and I think we'll be a lot better than last year. I love my team, but I had a real family at ESPN, and that's no disrespect to my team now, between Tirico, who I still talk to, and Judy, who's like a sister to me, and Andy North is like a brother, and it's what you grow in the business is what you remember, and I'll always remember those years.
I always love his candor, his honesty, and the fact that, he's World Golf Hall of Famer and two-time U.S. Open champ Curtis Strange, right? And when we return, Sally Morgan and Corey Armstrong with the Carolinas PGA join us to take Dead Aim at the 54th North Carolina Open, coming up this week at the Club at Irish Creek, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. The 54th North Carolina Open is slated for this week at the club at Irish Creek. And Sally Morgan and Corey Armstrong from the Carolinas PGA join us now. Corey, as I was looking over things, this is the 54th North Carolina Open, and I was just looking at some past winners, and of course, there's names that jump out at me. Scott Harvey, his father Bill Harvey won the first one in 1965 as an amateur. But there was a name that popped out, and I went, "It can't be the same guy. It can't be." In 1977, Harvey Ward won this golf tournament.
Correct.
For those that don't know who Harvey Ward is, if you ever read a book by Mark Frost called The Match, it is legendary that took place at Cypress Point with Kenny Venturi and Harvey Ward taking on Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan. It's one of the greatest stories ever, one of the most famed better ball matches of all time. And that's the Harvey Ward. So he played and won in this golf tournament.
Yeah, he's also in our section's Hall of Fame.
Yes, he is.
He was inducted in 1996. We've got a really really cool plaque as soon as you come into our office up here in Greensboro of he and I assume his wife there with it was a U.S. amateur trophy. It's one of our favorite pictures that we have within the Hall of Fame, so we're proud to have him as part of that. But, yeah. He certainly won this tournament as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. 54th North Carolina Open coming up this next week at the club at Irish Creek. But the festivities start on Monday. Let's talk a little bit about the Pro-Am event and what you have planned.
Yeah, we have a Pro-Am. We've been doing it for years. This time, though, with the birth of our section's foundation got started about 2 years ago. It's called PGA Reach Carolinas. And it is aligned with the PGA of America's national foundation called PGA Reach. So we've got a number of local teams. We've got 16 teams in total, 3 amateurs with each, along as well as a PGA professional from here in the Carolinas. A lot of local companies, particularly in the Charlotte area, are coming out to support the Pro-Am and really help us raise some funds to benefit our foundation.
Sally, why don't you tell me a little bit about this foundation?
Yeah, of course. So PGA Reach, like he said, is our 501c3 foundation, and it consists of 3 pillars. So we have the youth, military, and diversity and inclusion pillars within that foundation. So specifically, this event is going to be benefiting the PGA HOPE, HOPE standing for Helping Our Patriots Everywhere. That program benefits veterans all over, not only our section, but the country, helping veterans to get an outlet into golf and really find that life-changing experience for them. So a lot of this is going towards this adaptive golf program, PGA HOPE, for these veterans. And yeah, so it's a pretty special program.
Yeah, Charlie, it's really returned some really cool stories from these veterans that are telling us, you know, how important this program is to them. You know, without trying to be too dramatic, we are being told, you know, that if not for this program, some of them might make some choices where they'd no longer be with us. These men and women have been through things the rest of us can only imagine, and they come back, you know, different, changed people, and that's that they face a lot of challenges in their personal lives. And having this outlet every day, giving some of them, you know, something to look forward to each and every day when they're going through these clinics and these, you know, free instruction, receiving free golf access, just giving them something to look forward to that day. We have been told by them, frankly, this is the reason I'm still alive. So we're not making that up. We're being told it by these HOPE veterans. So, you know, doing this Pro-Am to help raise some funds for our foundation and with an emphasis on HOPE is what Monday is all about.
You know, not just the veterans that are looking for golf instruction. I don't know how much contact you've had with our armed forces who have served overseas, and especially in Afghanistan and in the Middle East. I have dealt with a couple of organizations, and on more than one occasion talked to these veterans who talk about how much golf meant to them while they were over there, and that, you know, there were organizations that sent clubs and balls, and they would make makeshift courses in the sand and whatnot, that it provided such an escape from them, and golf became so much more a part of their lives over there than it was before they left, and consequently it's a big part of their lives once they come home.
Yeah, I remember a buddy of mine did a few tours in Iraq and Kuwait. I remember shipping him a case of, you know, beat up balls. Didn't matter what the condition was, shipping him and his platoon a case of beat up balls that they would be either out just in the middle of the desert just something to do, something to waste the time, if you will. And then he told me, I didn't get any pictures of it, but there were some palaces also with, you know, just sprawling properties inside the palace and all, that they're playing golf at times.
Wow. Corey Armstrong and Sally Morgan with the Carolinas PGA, our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about the 54th North Carolina Open coming up next week at Irish Creek. The three-day event begins on Tuesday?
Yeah, full field, 156 of the best North and South Carolina PGA professionals and amateurs. So we'll be playing all day long, morning and afternoon waves. On Tuesday and Wednesday, and then after Wednesday's round, we will cut to the low 60 in ties to play on Thursday. And then we'll probably just be, if weather behaves Tuesday and Wednesday and we're on schedule for Thursday, we'll do a morning wave off the first and 10th tees for the leaders and hopefully be able to award a champion somewhere around 1:30 that afternoon.
Looking at some of the names in the field, I recognize a lot of guys that I've played golf with over the last several years. There's 157 competitors, but sort of give people an idea of the different kind of competitors you have. I mean, I saw guys who I know are in their 50s. There are guys who, for lack of a better term, I've got socks and booze in my cabinet that are older than they are.
You certainly do. We've got some individuals. I think actually our first numerical registrant is a 17-year-old. As far as he was the first one in the field. We've got a couple 17-year-olds. We had I don't see any this time around. We had our South Carolina Open 2 weeks ago, not to change the subject too much, but we even had a 15-year-old competing in that. So as long as they're able to hang with the adults, and if they're an amateur with the appropriate handicap index, they're welcome to play. So yeah, we run from teenagers to some old timers who, you know, we've got oftentimes, let me see if he's in the field, David Thor. He's 64 years old. If you remember his name, he was one on one of the most acclaimed college teams at Wake Forest ever. Played with guys like Scott Hoke and Curtis Strange, and he was on that team with a national championship. So we've got some really great older players and some very strong college players. This event, more so than any other of the other two state opens that we operate, is tremendously popular with college players. A lot of it has to do with they're familiar with Irish Creek, hosting its own college invitational tournament, so them being familiar with it as well as the club at Irish Creek being very easy to reach via interstate makes it a popular destination.
I was going to ask you about the club at Irish Creek. I know that it hosts both an NCAA men's event sometime during the season as well as an NCAA women's event. It's always in spectacular shape. From what I can gather, it's going to play just a little less than 7,100 yards in a par 71.
We're actually examining that as we speak, and we're going to be making a decision on one hole in particular on the front nine, the par 5 number 6. We are considering whether we're going to move that up to be a par 4, somewhere around 450 yards, so it might be a little longer of a par 4 than a very short par 5. So that's just something we're going to be deciding on Monday morning before the Pro-Am.
Sally Morgan and Corey Armstrong with the Carolinas PGA, our guest taking Dead Aim, get you out of here on this, and it's real simple. Definitely you want support for the Pro-Am coming out. I assume that anyone who wants to come out can, and probably not a big entry to go watch, yes?
$0 entry fee to come watch, so absolutely. We'd love all the local support we can get there. People are welcome to come out and walk. It's a very walkable golf course. The members at Irish Creek do a heck of a lot of walking when they play, so everyone's welcome to come out and spectate.
It's the 54th North Carolina Open taking place this week at the club at Irish Creek. I'd like to thank Sally Morgan and Corey Armstrong with the Carolinas PGA. Also, thanks to World Golf Hall of Famer and Fox Sports analyst Curtis Strange and from RonSyrac.com, the great Ron Syrac, for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Weather-wise, well, a heck of a lot better than it has been recently. To tee it up and let this game continue to haunt our soul and break our hearts, and if you do put a peg in the ground, Remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.